Coffee and Cream on Hale Varsity Radio with Andrew Rogers and Damon Benning.
Shot clock dips under 10. Lowry to his left. Beats the roller out of bio. Sends it out to Butler in the corner. Butler drives the baseline right. Short jumper's good, and he's fouled. Jimmy Butler a chance for three. 7 seconds to shoot. Lowry runs. KCP through a screen. Hits the rolling out of bio for a two-hand stomp. Out of bio set a tremendous screen and then rolled to the bucket and a chance for three.
Top of the hour here on Coffee and Cream in the morning on Hale Varsity Radio, powered by Currency. Damon Benning in the long sleeve.
Yes.
Long sleeve black. I am in the short sleeve gray. I'm sure they couldn't figure that out on their own, so I had to let them know that one did play football at Nebraska. The other looks
like... Yeah, I have the basketball high school zip on. You have the football.
He could be the wide receivers coach at Nebraska.
Yeah, you and your hot fries.
Yeah, and my honey buns, right? That's just what we do on this show. We introduce ourselves.
Yes, sir.
And we have great manners, apparently.
Did you see, I can't remember where I saw it, was either on YouTube watching movie promos or new releases, because I always do that. There's the Cheetos thing coming up with the guy that discovered hot Cheetos.
No.
Yeah, I can't. Shane, does it ring a bell where I may have seen that?
I haven't seen that one. I'm sorry.
Yeah, seriously.
Hmm.
And I'm like, gosh, they're going to make a movie about this?
And I'll probably watch.
I think it was.
Y'all?
I think it was during the trailer to Air.
Air.
Yeah.
Should we talk about basketball? Because you just made reference to Air.
Yes, so let's go
back into the NBA, and we'll talk with Michael Lee, Sports Enterprise reporter for the Washington Post. He's here with us now at Mr. Michael Lee on Twitter. Michael, good morning.
Hey, good morning. How you doing?
Good. The genius, right? Was that about a month ago? It might have even been longer, where I asked you the question about the regular season. And you said something to the effect, in typical funny fashion, look, man, why do we discount the regular season? Denver is the team. They did it in the regular season. They're doing it again in the playoffs. That's where I'm putting my money. Because I asked you the question on if you thought Phoenix could light switch this thing and get hot, and teams that were healthy or not healthy could get healthy. And you were riding with Denver the whole time, it seems.
Yeah, because they've been on this trajectory for a long time. They were in the finals in 2020, and it seems like everyone just has this – they just completely forgot about 2021 and 2022. They did not have Jamal Murray. And that is a huge part of not why they lost in the playoffs. They did not have their second-best player. So everyone was saying, how did Jokic win MVP but couldn't advance to the finals? Nobody goes to the finals by themselves. You have to have talent on your roster to get there. And if your second-best player, who I think we've seen in this postseason, is pretty good, he may not be an all-star, but he definitely plays that way in the playoffs. If he's not around and you're carrying a bunch of guys who aren't really up to the standard, you're going to lose. So now he has a full roster with him, and now it's amusing to me that people are like, wow, Jokic is really good. It really helps you when you're surrounded by better players. I remember a conversation I had with Kobe Bryant a long time ago, the year he won MVP, and that was right the same year they traded for Pau Gasol. And I remember he was joking with me. He was like, it's funny how I'm a much better player now when I'm not playing with Kwame Brown and Smush Parker. Like, it makes a difference.
Oh, Sasha Vujovic.
Good players. when you're surrounded by good players, you're going to look good. And Denver's been the best team, like, you know, consistently. And I think that's I'm glad people are starting to recognize it. But it's just a shame that we don't pay attention to what's right in front of us.
So, Michael, then, is Miami the exception to the rule of not having to be surrounded by great players to be in the position they're in?
Well, if you have a great system and you have like-minded players who all have that same chip, then you can kind of, you know, get past, like, just the, whatever talent deficiency you have. The thing about Miami and what makes them special is they compete. They play all 48 minutes. A lot of teams don't play all 48 minutes. A lot of teams take lapses. They take, you know, possessions off. They take everything off. Miami doesn't do that. Miami plays you hard the entire way. And if you don't play hard while you're out there, Spo will take you out, and he will put somebody in there who will. Like, they're all about accountability. And if you're not out there performing, he won't hesitate to sit you. And that's gonna make you hungrier to go out there to compete and play. There's no entitlement in Miami, and that's why they're in this position, because they compete and they fight. Now, obviously, in the regular season, they had a lot of injuries. They were up and down, and they weren't performing at the way they are now in the postseason. But when you have a great coach like Spo, and you have guys who are just out there trying to grind it out and trying to win, it's going to lead to some success. And that's why they're in this position right now. They've beaten better teams or more talented teams because they don't take possessions off. They don't relent. If they're down, they still feel like they believe they can come back because they know a team's going to let down its guard. And if they do, they're going to be there to snatch it. And that's what they've done consistently throughout the entire postseason.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was looking at this morning. I was talking to Andrew. It's like we're kind of burying the lead. I remember when the Lakers-Nuggets series first started, I said the only way the Lakers – and I'm a diehard, you know, just a junkie for the Lakers. And I said the only way they can win this series is to keep this thing in the low 100s to give themselves a chance to win. And when they didn't win the game in which Denver didn't score a ton, I knew that they were in trouble. Conversely, Miami's kept them to 106 per on average these first two games. This is a team that averages 116 in the regular season. How has Miami been able to do it defensively, in your opinion, when it seems like Jokic has dominated the conversation in terms of his prowess and what he's been able to do when he has the ball?
Well, because they muck it up. I mean, they play a lot of zone, and a lot of teams don't really know how to respond to that, especially Boston. They were completely lost when there was a zone. And I think that for Denver, they play that two-man game with Jokic and Murray, and if you play a zone, you can't really play that two-man game because there's no spots on the floor for you to really pull that off. And so I think that when the defense they play, the type of, you know, Spo will switch it up on you in a minute, and you don't know what's going to come. You know, like he'll call a timeout, and they'll run a completely different defense. Then you got to adjust to that. And once you adjust to that, he comes up with something else. And I think that's really what's throwing off the Nuggets. They haven't figured out completely what the counter is to whatever Spo is delivering. And if you're late to it, you're going to get burned. And but fortunately, in game one, they had built up a 20-point lead. So when Miami went on that run and cut it to 9, they still had enough of a cushion they could pull out the game. In the third quarter, yes, Sunday's game, they had an 8-point lead at the end of the third. Miami made that adjustment, and all of a sudden they're playing catch-up the rest of the night because they didn't have a big enough cushion for whenever Miami was going to figure something out and go on that run. And that really was the difference, Sunday night, is that Miami made the adjustment coming out of the fourth. Jokic was sitting, getting his rest, and then all of a sudden the Nuggets just completely lost control of the game. And they made it a great game at the end. It was great that it came down to the last shot. But that those moments, you know, those timeouts, quarters, Miami knows how to respond, and it's a credit to Spo. It's why he's the best coach, I think, right now in the league.
Along those same lines, and I want to step back to the previous question I asked you and the answer that you gave in regards to Miami having a good system, and that's why they're able to do what they do with the players they have. And we know it's sustainable because we've seen it over the course of the last 5 years with this team. And credit to Eric Spoelstra, of course, with that run. But I want to ask, Michael, yeah, for sure. I want to ask, is there another team in the NBA that could pull something like this off too? If it weren't the Miami Heat, who would you say is next on the list that could pull off having a guy that coaches like Spoelstra can really establish a good system and doesn't need great players to end up in the finals?
Wow, that's a tough one.
maybe Nick Nurse, but he had Kawhi be clutch, but he kind of comes to mind.
He does, but I don't think he's got that kind of team in Philadelphia or
no.
That kind of structure.
They're not grimy enough.
Mm-hmm.
They're not, and that's what makes Miami so unique. And you know, everyone, it's cliche to talk about the Heat culture, but it is legit. And if you can look at if you go with Udonis Haslam, a guy who was undrafted and now is in his 20th year in his 7th finals appearance, like he's the embodiment of Heat culture. Somebody who is overlooked and automatically has a competitive fire because he wants to have a point to prove. And so a lot of times you look at guys where they're drafted, and, you know, sometimes that gives you a sense of entitlement. There is none of that with these guys. The fact that they're undrafted means that they kind of play with an edge to them where they know they could be out of the league. And when you have that kind of drive and you have that kind of motivation and you have a bunch of guys on that same team who all compete, they all play hard, that's what Miami's about. They take undervalued competitors, they throw them together, and then just say, let's go out there and fight. And, you know, they were then you add talented guys like a Bam Adebayo or Jimmy Butler, that's going to elevate them, but you're still going to have that core of what the whole system is all about. And like I said, that's a credit to Pat Riley, because they look for these type of guys. They look for guys who've been discarded, who have some skill, have some ability, but may not be in the right environment. And I always say, like, Jimmy Butler, everywhere he was before, he kind of came off as abrasive. He kind of came off as somebody who was standoffish, and just it didn't really work, because he demanded that coaches pushed him. He demanded accountability. He demanded that if he messed up, that somebody would call him out. And you saw last year, there's a game against the Golden State Warriors where Spoelstra was ready to fight him. Like, he picked up a clipboard, threw it, and had to be restrained from his players, and Udonis Haslem is telling Jimmy, I'm going to beat your butt. Like, and they're going at it, like, on the sideline. And, like for most teams, that could really fracture you. That could really dismantle you and, like, really ruin your season. For Miami, that was just part of playing with Jimmy. That's just what it comes with the territory. And they love that. They love that feistiness. They love that fire. They love that passion. And it's really unique to Miami. I can't think of other teams that can do that, because it has a lot to do with the attitude of Pat Riley, the way he approached basketball, the way he competed. It has a lot to do with Eric Spoelstra, a guy who didn't play in the league, who came up through the video.
A videographer.
Videographer. Like, he came up through the video room, and now he's like, you know, just a really competitive coach. And so when you have these type of mentalities, have these type of figures together, you're going to have just a grimy team, and you're going to have a team where guys don't feel like they deserve what they get. They feel like they have to earn it every day, every week. And that's what makes them special, and that's why they're here.
I'm trying to be efficient because I want to get to a couple of these other hires in the NBA, but you brought up Pat Riley. Again, the diehard Lakers lover in me. 24.7% of the finals as a player, coach, or exec. You can't that's a quarter of the NBA finals that he has had a part of. You cannot undersell his approach to the game.
No, because I mentioned his competitiveness. This is a story that was told to me. Like when they won, when LeBron left to go to Cleveland, Pat Riley refused to wear those rings. He refused to wear the rings that they won with LeBron because he didn't want to wear them again until he won another one.
Mm.
So, like, you think about, like, him, like, I think he's probably broken from that, but, like, there were a couple years where he just refused to wear those rings because he was determined to get back however he could. And be back on top, just to sort of prove that he could do it again. And, you know, this is a guy that, you know, was willing to make the trade for Shaq. You know, obviously was able to lure LeBron down there. But, like, he didn't want to be seen as somebody who just, you know, needed to win a certain way or win with certain types of guys. If he can win with this group, it will basically prove that he's, you know, the Knicks should have given him whatever he wanted, you know, a long time ago. Mm-hmm. But he's just the type of guy who is unrelenting, and he's older. He's probably should be retired now, but the only reason he hasn't retired is because he's still seeking that next ring to really just prove to him that, you know, he can do it again. And that's what really is driving Miami, and that's what I think makes this run again special. They were there in the bubble, but this run is even more special because now they're doing it where people are actually paying attention.
We're talking to Michael Lee, sports enterprise reporter for the Washington Post, at Mr. Michael Lee on Twitter. Before DB gets into some of those hires around the league, I want to ask you this in regards to the finals, because every time I watch a game, it's the stat that pops up from the Nuggets is, oh, Jokic scored or assisted on X amount of points in the first quarter for this team, or Jamal Murray scored or assisted on these amount of points, and then they just become the duo that fills up the stat sheet. So if you could compare Jokic and Murray as a playoff combo that we've seen this year to another one of the greats out there, who would you compare their production to?
It's hard to compare. I mean, but if you're just talking about production, not playing styles,
Production.
It's Shaq and Kobe-ish. It's Shaq and Kobe-ish. Young Kobe. It's on that level to me. I think that Jokic is dominating at a level that Shaq was dominating when they were going on those finals runs. And you know, Murray's a little inconsistent. I don't know. I can't say he's up to a Kobe level, but when he's at his high, when he's at his peak, like, and he's hitting shots, and he's defending and competing on that end. I think they're right up there. I mean, and I don't necessarily want to make that comparison because I don't really like comparison. But you asked me to. But that's who jumped
I
out.
I apologize for that.
In terms of a big and a guard, those are the two guys that stand out to me. Just in terms of what they were able to do in the way they play, because what Jokic doesn't necessarily want to dominate. He doesn't want to score all the time. But Murray does. he wants to take all the shots that Jokic doesn't want to take. And you got to have that a guy with that kind of mentality out there. And so, but Jokic can dominate. And that's what makes him an awesome player, is that he knows what his team needs of him, and he'll step up to the occasion if he has to. But he'd be much more happy if he can let everybody else get off.
Oh, shoot. I'm going to have to get you out of here on this one. It's a quasi-comparison. I got to take advantage of the totality and how you think, right? We know Monty goes to Detroit. Some people like that young nucleus. Nick goes to Philly. We talked about the roster kind of in passing. And Mazzulla stays in Boston. Who knows if that roster changes. Next year at this time, who will be the happiest that they have their current job?
Oh, of the new hires?
Yeah. And I wouldn't call Mazzulla – I wouldn't call him new. I throw him in there because –
Sam Cassell.
Right, because they got him some bench toughness, right?
Yeah, and that's really what was missing from them. They really needed a guy on the sideline that the players could relate to and they could talk to. One of the reasons I connected with Ime was because he was a guy who could who had played in the league. And, you know, Mazzulla didn't have that. Most of the guys on his bench, they never played in the league. So if you're a player, you need to have somebody that you can rely on that can say, this is what I did when I was in that situation. This is what my teammate did in this situation. And you could trust them and know that you can lean on them. That's why I thought picking up Sam Cassell was good. But what was lost throughout that run is that, you know, Damon Stoudemire, you know, they lost M.A., you know, right before training camp. But then they lost Damon Stoudemire during the season. So he was a huge part of, like, kind of keeping those guys together, too. You know, you need to have assistants that can be a sounding board for players. I think Sam's going to be great in that role for them. But in terms of the guys who were just hired, the man who will be happiest with his position, Adrian Griffin.
Huh.
Because he gets to coach Giannis.
as he gets to coach Giannis. Okay, but listen. So, okay, follow up. But as a nurse disciple, can we separate the two?
In what respect?
Like the manner in which coaching, because all of a sudden, and I say that with the shine came off a nurse in a hurry. He went from being in the same discussion as like Spo to, I don't know, I think his act wears thin. How much of that is he bringing with him from the culture, from the Raptor culture?
Well, I don't think it's going to translate because, you know, what Masai Ujiri was building is similar to what Miami was building and what they're building in Philadelphia. I'm not quite sure what they're building. They have a great player in Joel Embiid, but I'm not sure what they want to surround him with. I think that what Nurse is going to do, he's going to come up with a scheme that's going to maximize the talents on that roster. They're going to be able to develop some of the younger players better than they have. But I don't know if it's going to translate because if they lose Harden, they're definitely going to take a step back on the talent-wise. And you're going to ask a lot more of Embiid in the regular season, and that's going to lead to him wearing down in the postseason as he usually does. So I don't know if that hire is going to change anything until they change their roster. Their roster is really the issue with Philadelphia more than anything, more than the coaches. I think that they have to have a second guy who can carry Embiid when he slumps and can carry them when he's struggling and it can really help push them over the hump. Right now they don't have that guy, and I don't know if Maxey is ready to take that kind of leap. I don't think he's that kind of player. They really need to have a guy who can say, okay, Joel, you're off tonight. I'm going to carry us. I'm going to take it home. Because everybody needs that. Every great player needs somebody who can pick him up when he's down. Even Shaq, when the Lakers were dominating, when Kobe was like, okay, you fouled out against Indiana, let me just go ahead and take over in overtime, and we're going to win this game anyway. You gotta have that kind of guy who can do that, and I don't know if Philly has that. So I don't know if it matters who the coach is.
Mm. What about up in Boston? Like, does it matter who the coach is up there? Because it doesn't seem like they get over the hump with Joe either.
Well, they were game seven at home of going to the NBA Finals. So they were down 3-0 and they didn't play up to their standard, you know, in that series. But they were still a game seven, and if Tatum doesn't injure himself in the first play, they might very well be playing the Nuggets right now in the NBA Finals. So as bad as people think Joe Mazzulla is, for a guy who got thrown into this coaching the team right before training camp, to have them in the conference finals and have them a game seven at home from going to the NBA finals, I think a lot of guys would say in my first year coaching that that was a successful year. Now, obviously, the expectation was higher for him because he was coaching a team that was in the finals the previous year, but they didn't lose in the second round. You know, they didn't lose in the first round. They lost in the conference finals to a team that I think we can all acknowledge is not really an eighth seed. They're not an eighth seed standard team. They're a really good team with a lot of veterans and a lot of guys and a great coach. So I don't know. I think that a lot of the criticism that Joe gets, he should, because he's a rookie coach figuring out on the go. But I don't see how you can say he's not going to get better. Like, isn't he going to get better? I mean, if you look at Spo, his first year in Miami, they weren't in the conference finals. I mean, you got to figure out who you are and what your identity is as a coach, but also how to motivate players. You got to learn your players throughout the course of the year. I think he figures out what some of their weaknesses and flaws are. And that's all a process of growing as a coach. I don't think he's going to get worse. So I'd be surprised if he does get worse. I think he's only going to get better just the way his players are going to get better.
You okay with Vogel landing in Phoenix?
I am, because I think that one thing that's overlooked with him is that he's a defensive coach.
I thought he got a bad rap in Los Angeles. I couldn't stand that
roster.
He got
a terrible rap.
Yeah, I'm with you.
He got a terrible rap because Laker fans are typically very irrational and not very knowledgeable. They just expected just the ball roll out and Lakers powers are going to come over and they're going to win just because they're wearing purple and gold.
Yeah.
And so their standards are ridiculous. You know, they act like no. The Darvin Ham took a team and started off 2-10 that was awful. Okay, got them in the conference semis, conference finals, and everybody's acting like he can't coach because he puts his hands in his pockets. Like, oh, this guy can't coach. I'm like, what are you talking about? They wouldn't be here if he wasn't the coach. I mean, look at all he's been able to do and like to get these guys to play at this level, and you're acting like he can't coach. Like, they've had good coaches in L.A. It's just the standard there is just ridiculous, and I think that, you know, it was proof that Russ was a bad move. Like, he wasn't going to win with him. You give him defensive-minded players like a KCP, you know, and those guys, like, they were able to win a championship. I don't think he became a worse coach because Anthony Davis wasn't on the floor, that LeBron was hurt. I just think he needed to have healthy players and defensive-minded guys that fit his system. And Phoenix, like I said, again, and also I think he'll bring the defense, but he also may be the guy who can tap into DeAndre Ayton. You know, one of the reasons why Monty Williams is no longer the coach is there is because he has such a disconnect with Ayton, and Ayton flamed out, you know, in the postseason. And, you know, as a coach, you got to find a way to really connect with those guys, especially the guys the team is paying. If a team is giving a guy a max contract – and you're not communicating with him, and you're not trying to motivate him to play at the best level, then there's really no reason for us to keep you around. And I think that's what happened with Monty in Phoenix. That's why he's in Detroit right now. So if you look at Vogel and his track record, he was able to turn Roy Hibbert into an all-star. I mean, Roy Hibbert an all-star. And no one really expected that of him when he was drafted.
Yeah.
And then you look at Anthony Davis. When he was playing under Vogel, people were saying that he could be the best player in basketball when they won the finals. So if you think you can find a guy who can play defense and motivate a big, I think Frank Vogel's a great hire for them. They just got to find other pieces that can complement KD and Booker, but mainly defensive-minded guys to help elevate them. So, yeah, I like that hire.
Michael, we appreciate your time this morning. Thanks so much. Enjoy the rest of the NBA playoffs.
For sure. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, Michael. Michael Lee, Sports Enterprise reporter for The Washington Post. Again, at Mr. Michael Lee on Twitter. More CNC after the break. Stick around.